Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is MJ Network, and let's get started on the right button. Here we go.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a road, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. In your mind, in your heart, gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when live and on the air.
That was created by Rachel and Michael from Trinity House Entertainment, Inc., and this is MJ Network, MJ in memory of my sister, Marcia Joyce, who started this whole journey for me. So, when it comes to murder, even brilliant scientists aren't immune. Ooh, how scary is that? The night Harry Munson is shot dead in the car, maybe he deserved it, maybe he didn't, I don't know. The primary suspect is the man's brainiac wife. There's the first person they always look at. But Charlotte, who has passion for science, sex with strangers, oh, she's cool, swears all she wants is a Nobel Prize for curing brain cancer, even if it requires fudging her research and anybody dead on the way. She doesn't care. So when the next Dottie drops dead, Charlotte, well, Sam, Detective Sam Lagarde, who just became one of my favorite new characters, has to find the clues and find out who did it. And we have the author of, check out this title, it's so cool, Lying, Cheating, and Occasionally Murder. Watch out. You don't want to start with Ginny Fitt. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Fran. I'm delighted to be here.
So, tell us about Harold and why it is assumed that when we learn about his murder, that it was murder, that it was an accident, or that it wasn't murder.
Harold, right. Harold crashes into the side of a building. The front of his car goes all the way through it. His airbags explode. When the police arrive on the scene, his face is in the airbag. The sheriff thinks that he sees Harold blink. And so he thinks that Harold is drunk and is disobeying orders. And so they surround the car and they order him out. And then they discover that he's dead with two bullet holes in his head.
Mm.
That's how they realize that, oh, he didn't just drive into a building. He was actually shot.
Poor Harold. So sad. And then
he's a nice guy.
They're going to decide if they like him or not. I felt so bad for Harold. But what I really liked is that you included us to get to know Harold eventually in the book, so you decide for yourself. So tell us about Harold and Charlotte and how you brought them back together. And how did you use flashbacks to engage readers in the story? That made it more interesting because I got to meet Harold up close and personal.
Oh, thanks for that. Yeah, it's from time to time, I wonder about how I'm going to let the reader know what I know about the character. Because I know a lot about them that never goes in the book. And so the flashbacks let me show the reader who this person was before that moment that they met whoever it is going to lead to their demise. So Harold grows up in a rural community. He has friends. He's his parents' pride and joy. He becomes a commercial real estate broker, and he's quite successful in his community. He is able to sell properties in three states, and he's on his way to making $1 million, his first year of making $1 million. So he's on the top of his game. And the only thing he doesn't have is the woman that's right for him. That's what he thinks. So he goes on one of these online dating apps, and he finds Charlotte. And Charlotte is gorgeous and smart and funny. And this is it. This is the perfect woman for me. Charlotte happens to be looking for a husband at the same time. So they click. They are a beautiful couple.
Well, they were a beautiful couple anyway. Poor thing.
Yes.
So, wait till you get to know Charlotte, people. Oh, boy. She's sort of my kind of person.
Charlotte's
she goes
deep.
After what she wants, even if she goes after it wrong, what could you do? So, Charlotte's father, I don't like him at all. He always put her down, and she always wanted to feel worthy of his praise. So why did he, from a young age, put her down? And, you know, that's not good, because that carries over to the present, seriously. My mother expected perfection, and, yeah, she still gets it in the present wherever she's up there watching me. So why did he put her down all the time? And what about Charlotte did he want to improve, other than everything?
Charlotte's father must have been treated in the same way that he's treating his daughter. And that is what led to his being a perfectionist. That's also why he's probably at the top of his game as a surgeon. And she's his only child, so she represents him in the world. She's part of who he is. That's how he sees it. If she's great, then he must be great, because after all, he created her. And he's just generally a mean guy. He's also mean to his wife. And his wife, who's a physician, has withstood this by ignoring him. The problem is she doesn't protect her daughter. So Charlotte grows up feeling constantly demeaned by this man. I mean, she can't even build a sandcastle to his satisfaction when she's a child. But her decision is not to be a victim about it. Her decision is to best him at his own game, to be better than him, to be smarter than him, and to achieve more. And that's what sets her on the road to wanting to get a Nobel Prize, which would be the top prize in medicine for research. That's where she wants to go.
If she wants to cure brain cancer, wouldn't that be nice? I could think of
yes,
a few other things
something.
That I'd like her to cure first, seriously. I can give her a list. And especially what I'm going for next week. Yeah, you can cure that too. If you find a cure for the incurable, that would be good. So why brain cancer? And she didn't really care how she went about doing it. And she did, what research did she do, and how did she prove to the world with her and Dr. Dickinson, so her superior, that her figures were right? And everything she was doing was right. She had the right idea. At least she was hoping to.
Yes, she has a good idea. In fact, I gave her an idea that several real scientists are working on. The notion that you can get the body to search out and kill cancer cells on its own if you just find the right way to juice up T cells. This is a real idea that's out there in the scientific community. So this is Charlotte's idea, and she's on the right path, but she is so eager, so ambitious. She's jumped a couple of steps. She wants to go from a few animal studies, which is where they start, to human subjects, because that's obviously where the fame is. If you can do something to somebody who's dying, causes them to continue living, then you gain a certain amount of fame. And so she's doing these small clinical trials with 5 to 7 patients who are already terminally ill and who have been through all of the other standard treatments, the chemo, surgery, radiation, and are still going to die. And she's trying her therapy on them. Her problem is they just keep dying. But she doesn't want that to show research. She wants to be able to say that at least some part of what she's doing with these patients is working. And so everything in science is quantified with numbers, statistics they call it, and the formulas that they use to show that what they're doing is better than either doing nothing or doing the standard treatment or giving a placebo, that is usually a pill, a sugar pill that doesn't really do anything, but patients think it does something, and so their body responds to it positively. So she's tried all these methods, and when down to having to report about her results, she looks at the numbers and she thinks, oh, this isn't as good as I want it to be. And so sometimes she copies the good result onto other patients, so that in her paper, it looks like all five people survived longer than they would have. Or for some reason, she has a patient who lives a year after the therapy. There's no explanation for it. She doesn't know why. But she copies that result onto other patients. And that's basically fraud. And the thing is, you know, this is actually happening in the scientific world. People really are
fudging
their research.
I was just going to ask that question. If it happens in real life, yeah. That's scary.
It does. Yeah, it is scary because sometimes these treatments go all the way to the FDA and get approved. And then 5 years later, another lab tries to redo the study that gave them the approval, and they can't get those results. It can't be replicated. That's how they talk about it in the field. And that means that maybe they weren't there. Maybe it didn't have a good outcome. But meanwhile, people are already taking the pills. Yeah, so it's a real life problem. And Charlotte is right in the middle of it.
I wonder how many people do these trials and clinical studies, and how many of them ever really get the real thing. There was a clinical study done a long time ago on Alzheimer's in Canada, and from what I gather, the people were actually getting better until the study was disbanded, and then that was the end of it. There's a book I just read that people should read. It's called California Cured, about clinical studies and stem cell research, written by Don Reed. And it's very interesting because in some cases they were actually able to solve something, but in some cases the studies were not funded, and that's it. So Harold finds out something about Charlotte, and it turns the situation in another way. So how does she feel about what he finds out?
Oh, well, she's very angry at him. He looked over her shoulder one afternoon and looked at her math on the screen of her computer. And he's a smart guy, and he understands math, and he could see that either she was making a terrible mistake or she was lying about her numbers. And he confronts her, and she tells him he's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But now she knows that he knows she's doing that. They're in the middle of a very bitter divorce. She wants everything. In the state where they live, West Virginia, she gets only half. That's the rule.
Mm-hmm.
So she would have to prove something terrible about him. Meanwhile, he now has this secret he's holding over her. And because of her reaction, he knows that it's important. And so he makes a copy on a thumb drive that he carries with him everywhere while he's trying to figure out how to use it to get what he wants out of the divorce. That's the thumb drive that Sam Lagarde finds on the pavement in the park where Harold's car smashed against the building. And it's the information on that thumb drive that unravels Charlotte's life far more than the death of her husband.
Yeah, I know. That thumb drive is very interesting. So we have Nick Waters and Mark Weissman. So what role do they play in her scheme? Because she's not alone in this, people. She's got people that actually help her out. Just, you know, well, she's a cold-hearted you-know-what, so what can I tell you?
Yeah, Nick, as you said in your preview, is her boy toy. She is no longer sleeping with her husband and hasn't been since the miscarriage, right?
More should she.
So,
I mean, she can get what she wants from
she
somebody
found
else.
Nick.
What could you do?
That's right. She found Nick online, and it was very clear that they knew exactly what they wanted from each other, and she pays him. So he's very happy, and he's pretty much like her little puppy dog. He'll do whatever she wants him to do. Mark Weissman, she finds, you know, in the subway while she's waiting for a sandwich, and she sizes him up pretty quickly. He's a 60-year-old retired detective from Baltimore, Maryland, and he thinks his life is over. And then this beautiful woman sits down next to him and puts her hand on his thigh, and it's like, oh my God, he has a second coming. So he'll also do anything she wants. So she gives them various roles to play in solving her problems. Actually, Harold's death is the second of her problems. The first of her problems is that she fudged her research. Harold being found dead in his car, that's her second problem. And the problems just keep accumulating for her until she can't take it anymore.
Well, people, Nick and everybody else, there's a show called What Not to Wear. This is called What Not to Pick as a Boyfriend or Girlfriend. This is What Not to Pick, people. I mean, seriously, if my sister were alive, she would give you the clipboard that she did to me before I got married to see if they meet up to the criteria of what you're supposed to choose. I'm serious. So obviously, Nick didn't get the email with the proper, you know, description of who he should choose, because let me tell you, oh my God, looks, you got to look past the face, people. So what happens when the police, namely one of my new favorite characters, Sam Lagarde, takes over? And how do we know that he knows that Charlotte is not anybody that any you're going to like?
Well, he knows pretty much from the first time he meets her. When she opens the door to his first call on her, to interview her after her husband has just died, her whole manner, the way she's dressed, the fact that she feels no sorrow or appears to feel no sorrow for her husband's death, all of these things ring bells in Sam Lagarde's head. On the other hand, he's seen a lot of people after their loved ones have been murdered, and so he has a little latitude in the way that he will view her. It's possible that she's simply repressing her grief, and, you know, it will show up later. But by the end of the interview, he's pretty clear that she's a cold fish, that she's hiding something. He doesn't know what she's hiding, but she's hiding something. And in order for him to clear her, he's going to have to find out more about who she is and what she's doing. And that's what leads him to talk to her boss, Dickerson, and other people who know her, like Betty Lou. You know, he's trying to form a picture of who this person is. She's at the top of his suspect list, particularly since she's so cold about her husband's death. And little by little, he finds out more about her and picks up the clues that lead him to think that with just one more interview, he's going to know exactly who did it and why. And that's when things get really messy for him.
Well, you know, what I like about Sam is that he doesn't just go with the first person. He's looking to actually find the person that did it. And a lot of police investigations that I've read or seen on the news, okay, he did it, that's it, bye, we're going to get him. And they don't look to see, you know, anything. And there's a book about, that was written by the Innocence Project, where 25 people spent over 20 years in prison and they were wrongly accused and they were there because the police didn't look any further. So that's important, that they need to know that it's not always the person that you think. So the other favorite character in the book, who seems to be, you know, have the quality of being a sleuth, is Beverly. So how does she come to Sam's life? And she seems to have a pretty good idea of what to do on the investigation herself.
Yeah, Beverly's, I really like Beverly.
Yeah, me too.
Sam met Beverly a few years before. She was the grandmother of a victim whose homicide he was trying to solve. And he met her then, and he was attracted to her then, but she made it clear that she was not interested in a relationship with anyone. Her husband had just died. She was just pulling her life together, and now her grandson had died. And although she thought he was very nice, she said goodbye. But he kept thinking of her over the years. And then out of the blue, she called him. And he is just simply amazed that this woman is in his life. He just can't get over it. Beverly is an artist, but she is also a farm wife, and she lived on a farm for years, and she knows how to be on a farm, what's expected of her, the kinds of chores she has to do. So she's very comfortable settling in on Sam's farm and taking care of the horses and doing her own thing while he's out there trying to solve a crime. But she's smart, and she has ideas about what could have happened. She's very intuitive. So in this instance, she immediately thinks it must be a woman who killed Harold. She just has that thought. And she tried to convince Sam at the very beginning, but Sam isn't going to be convinced by some intuition. He needs to know the facts, what actually happened. He needs evidence to prove a theory. So although he listens to her and he loves her for engaging in his work this way, he isn't going to just say, oh, you're right, I'll just go over there and that will be that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. That's what I said. You know, a lot of police officers, yeah, well, that's right, whatever. So we have Jim Taylor, who's another great character, proved to be really great. And Sam was joined with him. He's new, so he became his new partner. That must have been difficult for him to deal with. So what did he have him do first? And is this procedure common for when a murder investigation, to have a new guy just do a lot of grunt work or whatever?
This is actually a good thing for Jim to do. It helps him to understand
that
you don't just make a theory out of air. You have to have a timeline. You have to know what happened before the murder occurred, who was around, who were the witnesses, who could tell you something about this person who's dead that might lead you to a clue about who killed him. And so he has him doing that very specific work of setting up that timeline, finding out where he was, who he talked to, who saw him, what motivations in his own life, in Harold's own life, might have led him into trouble. So did he have a gambling problem? That's something to find out. And where better to find that out than at the casino? Ask the guys at the casino, the bouncers. They've seen him. You know, ask around the neighbors in his community. Do they know anything about him? Has he ever been in trouble? Just really find out who the victim is. So that's what he sets Jim the task of doing. And Jim is very competent. And so he sets out, he takes notes on what he's supposed to do, and then he goes and does it. And he takes notes on what happens. So he has a very good sense of everything leading up to the murder. And he's able to convey that. And that actually cuts down on the amount of time they need to solve the crime.
And they won't believe who did it because I'm not telling them. Oh, my God. That was like, oh, my God. I had a feeling and I'm going like, wait a minute. Oh, yeah. So Sam interviews Charlotte. What was his reaction to her when he interviews her? Because, you know, you don't like her. Trust me. You're not going to like her, people.
Right. He didn't like her either. He didn't
like her at all.
Well, first of all, she's talking to him, and that throws him. Because, you know, he's a guy who has some old world ideas about how women are supposed to be. So she's taller than him. She has more degrees than he has. She's too beautiful in his mind. And he feels like she's, you know, she has this kind of peacock thing where she shows herself off to him. Maybe she's a little too seductive, he thinks. So all of these things say something is wrong with her.
Something's very wrong with her. She has a narcissistic attitude, and she thinks she's wonderful. Other than that, she's a great person, people. You want to have lunch with her? I don't think so. So we've got Dickerson. Yep. And he learns, he's her boss, and he learns about her figures. So what does he do? And how would someone that she works for, would somebody actually do what he did, or would somebody just go along with it and say, the heck with that, I don't want to be embarrassed? What would they really do? Because that's scary.
Yes, I think that Dickerson, I tried to draw him as close to what might logically happen. So he's a very important man in his own right. He runs this big, important lab. Lots of people work under him, although he's very kind and doesn't say they work for him. He's basically the head of a large research effort. And he has his own publications. He's had his own career. That's how he got where he is. So it's an important position, and he has a lot of status in the medical research world. And when he begins to think that she might be wrong about her results, he worries about it. He wants to talk to her about it, but she keeps putting him off. And so he's doing this analysis in his own mind of what the effect will be. If he outs her on her research, will that hurt him in his lab? Will it hurt the other researchers in his lab? Can he minimize the damage? Can they just say, okay, we were wrong. These results aren't good. This therapy is not working the way we thought it would. We'll just start over and figure out where we went wrong. And this happens all the time because experiments are experiments. You have an idea. You try it out. If it doesn't work, you say, oh, I was wrong about my hypothesis. Let me form a different hypothesis. So he's thinking that's possible. And he's worried that Charlotte keeps putting him off. He knows she's not stupid. She must know that the numbers don't add up. So he wants to have this conversation with her. But he thinks he has time. You know, he's not anticipating that somebody's going to be murdered and that all of this is going to be splashed all over social media. So he's trying to feel his way into solving the problem. Meanwhile, he is completely thrown by how gorgeous Charlotte is. He can't be in a room with her. He tries to communicate with her by email and telephone, because if he's in the room with her, he loses his mind. And she does not make it easy for him. She's constantly putting herself next to him so that he will lose his mind. So Dickerson's in a bad place, and he doesn't have a good result for himself.
The guy needs, you know, he's a weak guy. This is so sad. But this is so true of so many people, that they fall for the outer shell. They don't realize that he knows that she's evil and doesn't want to do anything about it because maybe he feels he'll get lucky, poor thing. And you never know with Charlotte. Seriously. That's what was really cool about that. Who is she going to get next? And who is she going to get? Ladies, you would not want to put your husband in a lab with this person, because forget it, you'd lose. And you wouldn't even know. What can I say? So Charlotte seems to want everybody to tell her, I'm beautiful, I'm wonderful. But why does it seem that she escapes reality and she has this high self-esteem with herself? Or really, is it high self-esteem or low self-esteem, and she's trying to convince herself that she's great?
Yes, the latter. Yeah, she doesn't feel good about herself. Even everything she's tried, all of her accomplishments, she doesn't feel good about herself. She has to keep achieving more. And, you know, at the point where we meet her in the book, she's got so many balls in the air and so many lies going that something is going to collapse.
She doesn't know what the truth is after a while either. Yeah, she doesn't know what the truth is. After a while, you begin to believe everything that you say that's a lie. You don't know what's real and what's fake. I got that. Okay, I'm losing my mind too here. Before I forget, next week on the 29th, I had this all on a piece of paper that I just discarded, preordained. You want to get really scared? This book is scary. On the 31st, Burn One Down by Jeffrey Cooper. On the 4th, I'm so excited. I have a panel show with Dick Belsky, Charles Salzberg, Alan Topol, Bruce Coffin, and I haven't heard from John Lansing yet. We're going to talk about open-ended endings of a book and how we know that the villain might be coming back. Oh, yeah. You never know what I'm going to do. On the 6th, another one from Partners in Crime, Dangerous Places by Susan Hunter. Watch out for Leah Nash. She is vicious, and she's a great character. On the 7th, I contacted this author myself, and I never do that, but I couldn't put down Speed the Dawn by Philip Donnelly. It's excellent. On the 13th, the former head of the CDC, Michael Shushko, will be here with Evil Winds, and the topic is Africa and Darfur and the refugees. And on the 27th, to end June, better than ever, Island Zero is Tess Gerritsen's new movie, and I'm getting an exclusive interview with her that day as soon as Fran decides to watch the movie and not get scared. That would be later. And I'm going to have my husband watch it with me so I don't get too scared. But that's just what's coming up, and you never know. And Father's Day is coming up, so Lying, Cheating, and Occasionally Murder. People like books, people. A Steep Price by Robert DeGoni is coming out next month. You can pre-order Hiding, which is really scary too, by Jenny Morton Potts. Evil Winds by Michael Shusko. And there's a whole bunch more in Charles Salzberg's book, Second Story Man. You never know what I'm going to read next. I just finished The Three Shoe Boxes by Stephen Manchester. And get your tissues out, because let me tell you, that was absolutely fantastic. So we have another character that we'll touch on very briefly. Who is Betty Lou, and what's her problem?
Betty Lou is a PhD researcher, very, very, very smart, but very clear about how everything should be done. It should only be done her way.
Yeah.
And she was specifically picked by Charlotte to participate in this research because she's so smart and because it looked like she would be an asset. The problem is she knows that Charlotte is screwing up, and she wants Charlotte to stop that, to do it her way, to fix it. Charlotte is aware that Betty isn't happy in her lab, and she is worried that Betty will tell on her, tell Dickerson about the problems they're having with the research. And the first solution is a solution she goes to all the time. She seduces Betty. Betty isn't fooled by that. Although she falls in love with Charlotte, she is not fooled by the seduction. She's still sure that they should fix the research and that retractions should be issued, that things should be done formally in the correct way. But Charlotte refuses to do it her way, which makes Betty pretty angry.
She sounds like my mother, who expects everything to be done her way. Till this day, wherever she is up there, I can tell you now, she's watching and saying, make sure you speak slowly, carefully. Make sure you are dressed properly for the show, which I am. I coordinated, actually. And make sure that you don't mess up and speak. Oh, you have no idea. And make sure that you read, and until this day is the truth, 10 books a week. And, yeah. Cheryl knows.
Wow.
I started like 5 yesterday, and I'm getting like, oh my God, how am I going to, yeah, I'm getting there slowly. I finished Alan Jacobson's book, The Dark Side of the Moon. That was really phenomenal. So what happens when the truth comes out?
Well, when the truth comes out, I don't know if I can say this on your show, bad things happen when the truth comes out. When Charlotte is pushed to the wall and she knows that she can't assemble anymore, She acts out. She loses it, basically loses her mind. And she abducts Beverly at gunpoint, takes her off the farm, has no idea what she's going to do with her, but she is going to do something, anything, to get Sam Lagarde to stop investigating her, blowing up her life, destroying everything that she's built. And, of course, Sam is – go ahead.
Yeah, Sam's going to go after her. What does he do?
Well, he's in the middle of interviewing Betty Lou. He doesn't even know this is happening. And Sam has an issue with technology. He's not so sure about it. So he forgets that his phone is off because he went to the funeral and he didn't want his phone ringing or buzzing during the funeral. So he finds out an hour later, and he's frantic. And he and Jim Taylor just fly up the highway to try to find Beverly. And they sort of piece together where she might be. And they race down to the river, which is high because it's spring. And they see Beverly edging out there over the top of the dam, clinging to a tree.
Well, you know, knowing Beverly, and she's so perfect, you might want to leave her there. I don't get her off. Seriously. Beverly's got this, you know, problem in her own way. And, yeah, we're not going to say any too much more about her, but, yeah, she's an interesting, not very nice person either. Sometimes being perfect is, you know, can get you in trouble. And sometimes declaring how you feel is even worse. So between her and Nick, maybe they want to get together, Betty Lou and Nick. You never know. So tell us more about Mark Weissman and what happens to him. There's nobody safe in this book at all, seriously.
Yes, it's a pretty dangerous place. If you're near Charlotte, you might be in trouble. Yeah, she uses Mark Weissman. She wants to know.
I know.
Right? She wants to know what her husband is up to. She because she knows he knows something that is going to hurt her. So she has Mark follow him. And that's why Mark is there almost immediately after Harold is murdered. He's been following him. The only thing is, Mark didn't witness the actual shooting. He doesn't know who shot him. He just knows he was shot. And he takes a picture of Harold with Harold's own phone and sends a text to Charlotte with the picture so that she knows her husband is dead before the cops even call her about it. Which is why she can be so cool when the guard shows up. She's already, whatever feelings she had, she's already handled them. But that means, go ahead.
It would be fun to be like her just for an hour. It must be fun to be not care about anybody. There are a couple of people I'd like to use Charlotte's tactics on at times. Yeah, there are a few people that have aggravated me recently. I go, maybe I should call and find out, how do I deal with this? Because she's pretty clever.
She is very clever. Yes. Yes, she is. But unfortunately, Mark gets in very big trouble that he can't get out of. And then she asks Nick to help her clean up the mess. And Nick just comes running over and does that, does what she says.
He needs the clipboard, too. Seriously. I mean, what not to choose? I mean, so, oh, my God. I mean, I'm trying to think of who would play her in a movie.
Oh, Jessica Chastain.
Definitely, whatever. Has to be somebody cold-hearted in real life, too, because they have to, you know, you can't fake this stuff. Although lately I'm beginning to wonder about myself, how we're going. So who is Sergeant Frederick, and how does he help out? Because he seemed to be
a Montgomery County police officer. Right. He spots Betty Lou walking home from a restaurant carrying her take-home food. And she's just casually walking along. She has no problems. As far as she's concerned, she's, you know, outside the loop of anything. She's talked to the guard. He doesn't suspect her of anything. She's also a pretty cold fish, very much in control of her own emotions. And so when she is arrested, she just waits quietly and calmly to see what's going to happen.
Well, she's not done yet. She decides to go after somebody else. She goes after, what does she go after poor Beverly? I mean, really? What did she do?
Well, Charlotte goes after Beverly. And she goes,
Charlotte
after,
goes
Beverly
after Beverly
because she's just so frustrated. She has no idea how to stop LaGuard from messing up her life. And it's her last gasp, her last resistance to this, the crash of all of the lies that she's told and all of the ways that things are going wrong in her life. She can't take it another minute. And she thinks that she can somehow bully LaGuard into letting go of the investigation. Of course she can't. It wouldn't be possible that no police officer would ever accept that as a contract between himself and a perpetrator. So she's just gone crazy. And Beverly tries to handle her to prevent her from killing her. And she can see that the woman has lost it. So her goal is to try to let Sam know where they're going, what's happening to her.
And she was very clever. I won't say how, but she was very clever, Beverly. She's not stupid. But then
right.
we have
she's
Charlotte.
Stupid.
Why did they think Charlotte hired Mark to kill Harold?
Well, because he was the ex-police officer and because it was his gun that was used. So Mark's gun was used to kill Harold. Nick's gun was used to kill Mark. It looked like they had killed each other, you know, that they were somehow in cahoots to commit this murder. was intentionally done to try to throw the police off. And also a little bit to see if, you know, what it felt like to kill people. Because this is a murderer who does not have the kind of feelings that we normally have. This is a murderer who treats everyone as if they're a lab rat. And the kind of stress that the lab rats are being put under will show what kind of character they are. And so in a little way, you know, the author is like the scientist running rats through a maze, increasing the stress level and looking to see what is going to happen to these characters if the stress goes up a notch every few minutes.
I wonder what it would be like to work with Charlotte. The rest of the people in the lab
was
cringe every time she walked through the door. Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're not happy with her.
I wouldn't be happy with her either. I would absolutely, you know, and maybe Nick or Mark could help me out here. So I really thought about this. Like, you know, I read all these books and these murder books, and, you know, people say that, oh, my God, I should try that. No, you can't. You're going to get in trouble because, you know, this is a book, but you never know. In reality, you read the news. So what does Legard do along with Taylor to bring the investigation to a close? Because Taylor's really good. I like this guy.
Yeah, Taylor is with Legard when they go to rescue Beverly. And he is actually the one who sneaks up on Charlotte and tackles her gets her to surrender, yes, because she's holding a gun on Beverly, forcing Beverly to walk out into a flooding river with the intent that she would be swept away and drowned. So Jim Taylor prevents that from happening. And then as he thinks about everything that they've heard, all the people they've interviewed, he realizes that they haven't quite put the pieces together correctly. And as he's realizing this, Legard realizes it as well, that the thing they've overlooked is the place where they should look for who their perpetrator is. I don't want to put it more clearly than that.
No, we're not going to tell anybody who did it, because when they find out who did it, they're going to say, that makes sense. Not really. Yes, it does. So, Charlotte justifies everything she did. So if she could speak out in her defense or not in her defense, what would she say to everybody that's reading the book to make them like her, to make them understand, this is the way it is, I'm right, and get over it? What would she say to readers?
Yeah, Charlotte is actually saying to readers, I am working on a cure that is going to help millions of people. My work is more important than all of these other little problems, like numbers fitting together or little people with their little lives. Well, maybe that wouldn't make people like her. But that's how she thinks of it, that her goal is to really save millions of lives. And if she could just be left alone to do her research, she would achieve that goal. And the suffering of millions of people would be relieved. It just makes so much sense to her. That's more important than anything else that could possibly happen.
Well, she doesn't care if she's wrong either. So what if the numbers are wrong and people are dead afterwards? But at least I tried.
Yes.
You know, I wonder how many doctors, you know, lately, unfortunately, doctors are not on my top 10 hit parade. And I wonder sometimes, seriously, that they don't really care. It's just a matter of, the first question you ask when you walk through is, what's your date of birth, which I usually forget, and I won't answer. I said, next question, can we have your insurance card? I go, sure, no problem. And I give them all 27 of them, you know, hoping that I don't get caught with something to pay for that. And it's scary because they don't care. It's like, hi, good morning, can I have your insurance card? And this way you can pay the copay before you even start the process. I go, what if I don't like the process? It doesn't matter. If the killer could speak out without telling who it is, how would the killer justify the fact that, oh, well, too bad, you know, these people are dead and I don't really care?
Yes, for this particular killer, it's really all about love. It's about protecting the love object from those who are lesser than her. And, you know, it's ironic that here they thought that they were going after someone who had lofty ambitions and who was, you know, thinking about saving millions of lives. But in fact, the motive for this murder is the same universal motive as always, jealousy and love. And I think that's as much as I want to say about that.
We're not going to say anymore. So, I like Sam, and I like Beverly. How would you describe his strengths? And is he better because he met Beverly, or would he be the same?
Yeah, Sam is better for Beverly. No question about that. She makes him human. Sam has always had trouble with women. He's 5 marriages. All of them failed. And usually not the fault of the women, just because, you know, he gets involved in his work. He doesn't call. He doesn't come home. He forgets about dinners. He forgets about birthdays. He doesn't say the right thing at the right time. He's just really involved in his work. And so he's not a very good husband. And women tire of his messing up. And they leave him. So he's sort of given up on the idea that he could possibly be with anyone. And he's gotten kind of cranky in his old age. He doesn't really like people, he tells Beverly. And, of course, he has a job that puts him with people all of the time. So she comes into his life, and she sort of softens his edges. She makes him think that there are possibilities that he hasn't explored, that he could have a life that might be worth having instead of just trudging through every day trying to solve the next problem.
That's so sad. But that's so true, though. Not only do detectives and police become jaded, but a lot of people become jaded after a while. So that makes it it's sad.
Think you could be an accountant and get to be like that. Yes.
Yeah, I'm glad that I never got. I was an educator for 36 years in a tough school in the Bronx, and you know, you have your days and whatever. But I never want to go to work. When I had to retire because my mom got sick, that was another story. But I know I must have done a great job because my students are on Facebook, and several of them in my class that I won't say my first one what it was actually Facebooked me about 2 weeks ago, my very first class ever, and they told me that I was wonderful, and I felt so good knowing that I didn't mess up. Yeah, it was great. My foot doctor is my student too. So Paul loves me, and then he put me in touch with 3 others, and I go like, yay, I didn't do so bad, right? So the other researchers that work with Charlotte, how come they never questioned her? They were so afraid of her that they couldn't question her or ask her or even say, Charlotte, you made a mistake. We're going to help you fix it. They couldn't do anything?
There's a pretty powerful hierarchy in research. And these research teams are put together by the top person in that field. All of the young researchers are going to get their reputations working on this particular problem with this top researcher. And so there is a reluctance to question. And even if they question among themselves or in quiet groups with the leader, they're not necessarily going to out these problems because it affects all of them. All of their names are on these scientific papers that are published in the major journals. And so all of their reputations are on the line. If something is wrong there, then all of them suffer when the work is retracted or worse, you know, if the work is debunked, if some other team says, this is just a crock, you guys have been lying. Mm. All of their reputations are affected. So they have to figure out a way to handle this. The normal thing would be to quietly transfer out, to go to somebody else's lab, try to get Charlotte to give them a good reference, and move on. But it takes a while to figure that out, particularly, you know, you're 30 years old, You're trying to see where your career is going. You've invested an enormous amount of your time in learning in school, and this is your first real hands-on experience in research. So it's a fraught issue for them.
She's insane. She's a psychopath, but she doesn't see it. She thinks she's perfectly rational, and she has no empathy for anyone else. And
wouldn't that be the way it is? Right.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people I know today that have no empathy for anybody else too. You know, do you ever walk and get on the phone and say to someone, "How are you?" And they don't even they're good, and they don't ask you, "How are you?" They don't care. it's scary. Seriously, I mean, I just told the doctor's office to go next week for something, and I said, "How are you?" She's like, "I'm fine." I go, "Well, what about me?" Okay. Sorry I bothered you. What can I say? So, are you bringing him back? And will Taylor be promoted to detective and work with him? Because I really think at this point he deserves a little boost and a boost in pay because I like him.
I don't know if Sam is coming back or not. If, he sort of rides off into the sunset at the end. But Jim Taylor has shown up in a short story that I wrote that I'm I've submitted to see, and I'll see if it gets published anywhere. And he is in the short story. He's a detective, fully in charge of himself and knows what he's doing. So we'll see. You know, I really don't know. Until they start talking to me, I don't know what the story is. I have to wait and see. I know that sounds a little crazy, but that's the way it is.
Well, I'm going to have a word with Sam. That's it. And seriously, I'm going to have a word with Sam, and I'm going to explain to him why he needs to come back just because I finally got a character that I don't dislike. I like him because he's not one of these
detectives.
Well,
there are some
that,
earlier
you know,
books.
Yeah, I you know, it's funny because I read a book a long time ago. I won't say the title of it, but all I know is that, seriously, it was one of the worst books I've ever read because the person had no idea about how to do a police investigation. And I think it was the very first time that I said, I'm not reading this book and I'm not reviewing it because it's only one star. And
oh, my God.
The person I review for a very big publishing thing, and the guy understood me because he said, you're right. I said, if you read this, you're going to know that the chief of police would never say he was incompetent and hire a retired detective with his wife to go into the hole to get the bones out. I don't think so. And at that point, I really didn't care who committed the murder because I just, like, tossed the book and said, this is going somewhere, and it's not staying here. What can I say? So what's next for you, and where can everybody find out about you and your work? This has been fun, let me tell you. This book is really good, and I've got – my cousin just texted me. She says, I want it. Get it yourself.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, so
yeah.
I have a Facebook page, Jenny Fight Author, and I also have a website, jennyfight.com. And the next book out is not a Sam Lagarde book. The next book out is a political thriller titled End of Bad. And that comes out on June 2, and I will be at a book signing this year, yes, in a couple of weeks.
Oh, God.
On June 2. Well, I expected it in September, and for whatever reason, the publisher said, we're doing this now. So June 2, No End of Bad, and I will be at a book signing with Nora Roberts at her bookstore in Boonesboro, Maryland. The name of the bookstore is Turn the Page Bookstore. It's very cute. And they expect hundreds, so you have to get a ticket for your time to get in line to have books. I was just there the other day. It's quite amazing.
I have to try to get her next one. I have the year one, but I want that one too. And I'll have to email her publicist, and hopefully I'll get her next one. I don't know if she does interviews. It's very hard to get her on the show. But I hope you're sending me the book on from, you know, it might have a pile. People, if you look at my chair, there's 20 books on my chair. And Cheryl knows I am trying to read every book for August. So I'm almost done with Dangerous Secrets, and I started Selected. And the bad part is I can't put them down, which is not good. I mean, really great. And I've got a few more that are coming for August. and September, and probably December I have one too that I just got. Matt Coyle Blood Truth is fantastic, but Matt Coyle Wrong Light, December 4th, it's coming out, and we're going to do the show that day. So you've got to send it to me. And are you doing a blog tour with them or not this time for this new political thriller that Fran has to read, without a doubt?
You know, I haven't even gotten to that. I was just like so thrown by the fact that I'm still in the process of talking about lying, cheating, and occasionally murder. And then here's this mm-hmm. next novel. So I haven't even thought through what I'm going to do. I'm just starting with the book signing, and I'll see what happens after that. But I will send you the book just for fun. So you can tell me what you thought about.
Oh, just for fun.
You've
got to send it to me. Are you using the same publishers, Black Opal? Oh, okay. So that's who she's using. Aha, uh-huh, nice. And everyone, it's a beautiful day outside, and I hope you, everybody knows that Father's Day is coming next month. And I don't know, everybody in my family reads, so I know that if you buy, you know, a couple of dozen of Lying, Cheating, and Murder, and buy the next one and keep going and give people books besides the gift cards and the shirts and the ever, books are so much better, seriously. And everyone, Ginny, thank you so much for today. This has been fun. And when I get the book, let me know if you want to do another interview. I don't do interviews in July. Everybody knows that. I take off. And I'm going to the Thriller Fest, the 13th to the 15th. Anybody who's there, come say hi to me. I'll be there. And August is filled. Just got filled. So September's available. Some dates in there. A couple here, there, and there. And just let me know. And thank you so much for today. It's a beautiful day outside. And everybody have a nice day. Thank you so much, and bye.
Thank you, Fran. Bye-bye.